when there's this partnership between men and women, complementing with our different strengths, helping each other in our blind spots. And that has just been a beautiful way to see the church thrive and continue to multiply when men and women are partnering together.
Hey, hey, welcome to the Live Like It's True podcast, where we talk through some of the most astonishing stories in the Bible and how to live like those stories are true. I'm your host, Shannon Popkin, and my hope is that these conversations will inspire you to better know the story, share the story, and live the story. In this True Story of the Beginning series, we're looking at Genesis 1 through 3 and asking, how does the origin story in the front of our Bibles counter or correct the false narratives of the world? And once we're grasping this true story, then we're asking, how can we live like the story is true? Are there any women who are trying to control things at your church? Are there any shepherding men who are ignoring the women at your church? If you've ever rolled up your sleeves in church ministry, you know that there are pitfalls and frustrations when we, as men and women, try to blend our gifts in the local church. So in this episode, we're going to talk about how to cultivate a fruitful complementarianism in the local church, one where brothers and sisters realize that they are better together by God's design. You know, in these bonus follow-up episodes to our True Story of the Beginning series, we're gathering up all that we learned in those many episodes where we focused on Genesis 1 through 3, and we're asking, how can we live like this story is true? Now that we've opened our Bibles to drink in this true origin story, we're asking, what difference does it make? How can we live like it's true? So in this conversation, we're talking about complementarianism. Last time we had Brian Robinson here, and we talked about what is complementarianism, what is it rooted in. But this time I have my friend Cheyenne Warner with me talking about women's ministry in the church and what we can learn about it in Genesis 1 through 3. So you might think, oh, this might be a stretch. You know, Genesis 1 through 3, there's only Adam and Eve. Isn't that a stretch to make application about men and women in the church? At first glance, yeah, it might seem that way. But remember, marriage is a metaphor that points to Christ and the church. So all of our information about marriage has something to say about Christ and the church in the Bible. So Jesus, when responding to questions about marriage, referred back to Genesis, to our origin story. And also Paul and Timothy, who are New Testament writers, and they were the ones who helped launch the church, they referred back to Adam and Eve when teaching about the roles of men and women in the church. So all we're doing today is what they did. We're looking back at Genesis 1 through 3 for help as we roll up our sleeves as women who serve next to men in the church. To help me with this conversation, I've invited again my friend Cheyenne Warner, and she is a women's ministry coordinator at Peace Church, which is a church here in West Michigan where I live. Cheyenne is also an artist, so you can find her work on Instagram and Facebook at Designed by Shy. And you can also find her Etsy shop, which we will link to in the show notes. Now, you might have seen some of Cheyenne's artwork. If you get my emails or follow me on Instagram or Facebook, do you remember the painting I shared, which correlates with our Genesis series? Well, Cheyenne is the one who created this beautiful painting. It has two trees side by side depicting the tree of the knowledge of good and evil and the tree of life, which were both present in the Garden of Eden. And then there's this path that leads away from the tree with the forbidden fruit. It leads out of the garden. And off in the distance, there is a cross. And then at the cross, there's this other path leading back to the tree of life. That is our story. That's what we've been talking about in this series. And it was painted by Cheyenne. So come check it out in my shop. We've got a framed or a wall hanging version. But I am so excited for you to meet my dear friend and get her perspective as a boots on the ground women's ministry worker as we talk about complementarianism.
Complementarianism.
So I'm here with my friend, Cheyenne Werner. And Cheyenne, we got to know each other a few years ago when I spoke at your church, and we just have become friends. You know, we talk about the Bible, we talk about teaching the Bible, and I just love you. I love your heart for Jesus and for ministering to women.
I have just loved getting to know you too. You've been such a blessing to me, Shannon, and I'm probably your top fan of your podcast too. I love being able to do women's ministry at my church. I'm excited for this conversation.
I am too. So, you know, we've spent an entire season. Thank you, by the way, for being my top listener. We've spent an entire season talking about Genesis 1 through 3, and we're looking at what are the details that help us navigate life in the way that God designed it. You know, we're looking at the original story. Sometimes I think as Christians, we tend to cut off the two ends of the story. We don't put enough emphasis on the way God originally created and designed everything. And then we also don't put enough emphasis on his new creation design. That's really the emphasis, is we're trying to look at the goodness of the original design. So just as review, can you think about anything from the story of Genesis 1 through 3 that helps support the idea of complementarianism? Any details from the story of Adam and Eve?
Sure. So I think that we see God establishing a pattern from the very beginning of him creating Adam first, but then he sees that Adam is not complete. And it doesn't mean that he did something wrong, that he's like, you know, this isn't good enough yet, that he made an error in any way, but he wants Adam to recognize his own need for someone to complement him, for someone like him, right? Because he's looking around and he's seeing all these animals, but nothing like him. So he allows Adam to kind of feel that. And then he creates woman, right? Who is to complement him, who's bone of his bone, flesh of his flesh.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we did a lot of emphasis on that part of the story. There wasn't an episode that we did on Adam naming the animals. So I love that you brought that out, because what we see in the pattern, this is Genesis 2, God creates Adam, and then he has him name the animals, and then Eve is created. So with that progression, we see, yeah, God has purpose in that. He's trying to show Adam, like, none of these, like Adam says, there was none that was fit for him. There was none that was a mate for him. You know, it was quite obvious. All of the animals had a mate. He did not. And then God brings Eve to him.
But this isn't the first partnership, the first pairing that happens in creation, right? We see that pattern from the beginning of you've got your heaven and your earth and your sky and your land. And so here again, God is doing that pairing, that partnering.
Yeah. You know, land and sea, sky and earth. And in the new creation, we're going to see heaven and earth come back together. You know, we have this separation after the fall where, you know, they sinned and they exit the garden. But in the new creation, heaven and earth will be reunited. And so there's something really special about this joining together of the two parts in the story. There's a pattern of that. And so when Adam and Eve come together, what are they able to accomplish that they could not on their own?
Well, it commands that they be fruitful and multiply. So not something that Adam could have achieved on his own. He needed a helpmate for that. And of course, that goes into so much more than just creating children.
Absolutely. That's God's design for marriage. And we've talked about this repeatedly through this series. God's design for marriage is pointing to another marriage. It's embedded into the story of creation that we might understand the marriage of Christ and his church. And from the beginning, we saw God's design was that his image would be stamped all over the earth. We are his image bearers. And so God didn't want there to just be two image bearers. He wanted to spread his image across the face of the earth. And that happens in marriage with babies. But then do you remember, like, Pentecost with Christ and his bride being united? And then at Pentecost, we see babies. Like, I loved my conversation with Mary Cassian about that. She's like, yeah, 3,000 babies were born that that first day. And then, but then the church is commissioned to be fruitful and multiply. So Adam and Eve had this commissioning of be fruitful and multiply. And the church has this same commissioning. And Cheyenne, do you have any thoughts on how that, in the same way that Adam could not be fruitful and multiply on his own, the church cannot be fruitful and multiply without both men and women involved?
Sure. Gosh, being in women's ministry, being on staff at a church, you see the beauty that happens when there's this partnership between men and women, and how much more we can accomplish working together and complementing, right, each other with our different strengths, sometimes helping each other in our blind spots as well. And that has just been a beautiful way to see the church thrive and continue to multiply and be fruitful when men and women are partnering together. I think you had a really good illustration too that we were talking about.
Yeah. Maybe this is a great time to share that. We see this order that God has put in place where Adam is the leader, but we also see the male and female roles being distinct in the church. And the New Testament writers point back to Genesis. There's instances where they talk about roles and they point back to our Genesis story. You know, Timothy points back to the fact that Adam was created first and then Eve. So like, we're not just reading into things here. We're really taking our cues from also Jesus. Jesus talked about the creation story. Look at how Jesus selected the leaders for the gospel movement. You know, his 12 disciples were going to be the ones who kicked off this whole new era of the church movement. And did he select men or women? He selected men. So we see something in his example there. But okay, so here's my illustration. Think about handwriting. Like when you write, which hand do you write with, Cheyenne?
I write with my right hand.
Yeah, but when you use a keyboard with your computer, what do your hands do?
Well, they are working together in unison, and I suppose not even unison, almost, because they're doing different things at the same time for the same goal, the same purpose.
Yeah. So there's a unity. They're not working against each other. Like, no, it's my turn to type. Like they're working together. And I was thinking maybe that is a good picture of complementarianism, because I think sometimes we think of it like the handwriting thing where only men get to do this thing over here. But no, it's really men and women coming together. And it's only as they do come together that they can be fruitful. There's so much less that I can do through handwriting than I can with my hands working together on my computer. Now, my right hand does do some things that my left hand doesn't. How about you? What does your right hand do at the keyboard?
Sure. So my right hand is doing some of the commands, right? So that's what's going to be controlling your mouse or your mouse pad, I suppose. So there are some distinct roles that your right hand plays that your left hand maybe is not. But at the same time, there are even times I was thinking about your metaphor here, and there are times they're even doing something at the same exact time, such as when you need a capital letter and you're holding down your shift button so you can get to a capital S on the left side too. So on the one hand, again, just to like reiterate, like distinct, but at times like even the same action at the same time, and that I think that fluidity grows too the more that we do ministry together.
I love that. That's so good. Yeah. So, I mean, there are ways that you and I are both complementarians, and we believe that men are distinctive. They're, you know, and really the distinctions are that those top leaders, teaching pastor and eldership, however your church arranges it, but those who would be the church fathers, like the leaders of the church. So like, for instance, if I'm ever asked to speak in a gathering of a church before the whole congregation, I'm not comfortable with that. I defer to the male headship in that situation. But in virtually any other setting, if I'm invited to speak, my answer is yes, please. Even if I have spoken for mixed groups of people. So like at a conference, maybe where I'm leading a workshop or even a plenary session, I'd be happy to speak, but not in the church setting? Is that the way that you?
Yeah, that's the way that I understand it, is really that role of authority or shepherding, or, you know, to use your metaphor of thinking of that right hand, how the right hand is really taking the lead still, even though both are so necessary. But yeah, that's the distinctive role that men would have, but it doesn't make the woman, like you said, any less necessary for accomplishing ministry.
Absolutely. And I think there is a danger almost in segregating men and women. There's, you know, I'm just thinking, my friend Christy travels the world. She's a missionary and she works with the women. She said she did a particular missions trip and she noticed that the men had their little circle, their fire. They were around a fire and the women had their circle. And the missionaries were all training the men and nobody was over at the women's circle. Nobody was teaching them. Nobody really cared about them. And who's influencing the children in the next generation? Well, primarily it's the women. I mean, we would hope that both are, but she then goes, she's going for the women. It's so important that we don't segregate in the work of the ministry. The women are probably more than half the church, right? It's a huge influence on the church. Women are so important. So I think the danger, though, in segregating, like, you know, thinking of men as they're the only ones with the handwriting, you know, it's only the right hand that can do the teaching. And, you know, even you and I would use the word preaching, even though that can be a little confusing, but preaching is a little different than teaching in that teaching, you're just sharing information. Preaching, you're calling for an action. And so you and I both teach women regularly. You lead a women's Bible study and regularly teach and preach because you're calling for an action from your women. And so we're not saying that women can't teach women. We really want to see that happening.
Sure, of course, absolutely. And so I think that the difference, and I heard on Knowing Faith, the Village Church had talked about it being a shepherding role that men are to play. And I think that's been really helpful for me to think of when I'm trying to figure out, am I crossing, like, how do I define what I should be doing and what I should be deferring to the pastors for? And really, they talked about it when it comes to a shepherding role for both genders, that should be for the male pastor. And it goes along with the pattern that we see in Genesis, right? Of God creating an order. Even what you see with the Trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit, is the Son is submitting to the headship of the Father. They are, you can't say that they're not equal, right?
Exactly.
Right. And so just because we are submitting under the shepherding of our pastors and elders, that does not mean that we are not equal or that we are not, don't have an important role still within even the Sunday morning or teaching Our Ladies, like you shared too, of still doing some under shepherding, I suppose you could say, with the women in our church. But it's so important to find that balance between, right, women not trying to take over and wanting to dominate, but submitting to the leadership. And then men, including the ladies, and like what you're talking about with these missionaries, these conversations, we want to be included in. It's important. We want to get it right, right?
Yeah, I think let's look at both of those separately. So it's just like in marriage, where the time that we have to submit is when we disagree. There has to be a leader. You know, if we're both voting and it's 1-to-1, somebody's going to make a decision to move forward. Again, the goal is that the church would multiply. Like, that's our mission. And so there have to be leadership decisions. There have to be choices made by leaders. And as women, what we want to do as complementarians is embrace the leadership of our shepherds. Have you ever seen any instances where, I don't know, you've seen a negative example of that, where women really are not deferring to the leadership?
Oh, man. I think that's always a temptation for us. You know, your book, Control Girl, we like to be in control. And when we see something happening that we think we could do better, or that we think they could do better, we like to have an influence. And so I think, I mean, I think if we're all honest with ourselves as women, we tend to want that a lot, even if it's just in the quiet of our hearts. We can be very critical of our leaders. We can be, and sometimes we do try to take control. Maybe we also don't know all the facts, and it can cause so much disruption and so much disunity.
Yeah, I think that's one of the distinctions of the shepherd is they have more information. And one of the things I talked about in Control Girl is, you know, when they reached out for the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they wanted to know what God knew. They wanted to see what he could see. And Eve was the one who reached out for the fruit. She wanted to know all that stuff. She did not like being shut out of the control room, you know? And I think that's the same in the church. We have like women who really were not content to defer to their shepherds. I think it's in us. I think you're exactly right. It goes back to that. Your desire will be for your husband, and not just your husband, but your desire will be to take control.
Yeah. And the other thing that we need to be aware of as women, whether this is in the church or even this applies to marriage too, we need to be willing to let God work in our husbands or our church leaders. Maybe they are making some choices that we feel like are not the best. We see other things that we see as blind spots, and we want them to listen to us and listen up and pay attention and make the decisions that we would make if we were in that. You know, we're okay with them leading as long as they're making the decisions we would make. But the reality is that, like, we have to have grace to watch God work in their hearts too. And so even if they are making a decision, of course, not going against the Bible, but that we don't deem best, that we have that grace to allow the Holy Spirit to work in their lives. I think actually it's bringing to mind, I think, one of your chapters, maybe with Rebecca, of we are not their holy personal Holy Spirit. Yeah. Was that right?
Yes. Yes. Not being the personal Holy Spirit. I had a situation at one of my churches where I really saw a problem area in there were no women teaching women in our church. And partly that because that's what I'm drawn to. That's my gift and I want to share it. And so I respectfully went to my leaders in, like, I did not jump up on the org chart. I went to one leader and then they said, well, I think you should talk to this leader. And then I talked to this leader and I got to the top leader. And then it was just like, yeah, I think this is something we should pursue, but it didn't happen. Sometimes I think it's being patient with God's timeline, how it unfolds. Eventually, I think they did. We had left that church at this point, but I think they did add in some teaching and that was great. But so many of the things that I feel frustrated with or whatever, it just has to do with timing. I would like to be in control of the timeline. And sometimes I'm not aware of pieces of information that affect the timeline, right?
Yeah, totally. But you know, it also, what it should do for our hearts too, is I love what you did there. You were trying to be very faithful and diligent in how you were approaching it and patient too. But sometimes we're driven to the end where we can't do anything because what we really need to do is pray. And it's kind of funny that it takes us getting to that point sometimes to remember to pray for our leaders. It should be something we're doing all the time. But I do think that sometimes the Lord uses this complementarianism to remind us as women to pray. We better be on our knees praying to the one who does have the influence, all the influence and control.
And perhaps God does hold the timeline so that we'll seek him versus trying to take over ourselves with all of our great ideas and ways to make it all better. But okay, so in one sense, we want to defer and support our leadership as women. We want to do our hard work of getting on our knees, surrendering to the Lord, letting our leaders be the leaders, treating them like the leaders, right? Being respectful and just deferring. But on the other hand, we feel this tension when our leaders don't include us. You know, when it's as if the women somehow are not part of it, that would be like me trying to type with one hand, right? You know, we just want to be seen as necessary. I'll give you an illustration. This goes back 20 years, I think. I was a children's choir director at my church. And we would have kids choir in during the Sunday evening service, the kids would be dismissed. And so I was their leader, and our pastor for like, I don't know, several weeks in a row didn't dismiss the kids. And I had my helpers lined up. I had snacks. I had a whole, I was a teacher. So I had an agenda. Like, we were working toward a musical, and I needed their time with me practicing. And when I asked, you know, I was kind of new at directing this choir. I was only a few months in, and someone said, oh yeah, sometimes he does that because he thinks it'll be important for the kids to hear the sermon. And I was so frustrated because I felt invalidated. I felt like, okay, so you're saying that your sermon matters, but what I have planned for these kids doesn't? Like, that's how I felt about it. And so I very carefully wrote a letter. I was trying to defer to the Lord, but I was wrestling interior. And I was 20 years younger, so I don't know what that letter looked like. Knowing me, I shared it with my husband, and he's like, okay, we need another version. So, but that was an example. And I don't remember exactly how it worked out. I remember that he wrote me back and said, I want you to know we affirm you and we're thankful for your ministry. And that did mean a lot to me. And I can't remember exactly how things shook out, but that's really what I was craving, to know that I was part two.
Oh, absolutely. It means so much to just feel valued for what you do have to add. Can I give you a good example that I just recently experienced?
Yes, please.
So I oversee women's ministry. I do a lot of the teaching for our women on Thursday nights, and we are going through the book of Romans. And Romans 9 is a particularly tricky passage of scripture. One of our pastors, he was teaching the men's group. So we're doing the same book. We're both studying Romans 9, men over there, women over here. And I came to him and I said, would you, since you're teaching Romans 9 too for the men, would you mind if we got together and just like compared notes on this? And he said, sure, of course. And so we set up a time to meet and to talk through it. And it was just such a wonderful conversation and so affirming that he made that time for me. Because women, whether we're teaching on a stage in women's ministry or we're teaching our kids, right? Like you said, there is a lot of influence that we have in the church, even just within our kids, this multiplication, and we want to make sure we get it right. Having that shepherding, even that, like what he did there for me, it means so much, right?
Absolutely. Just him seeing you, noticing you as a Bible teacher and Bible study author, I often feel, because I don't have a degree, you know, I didn't go to seminary. I don't know why they let me write these books. I think it's just, I do clearly have spiritual gift and I'm trying to share it with the church, but sometimes I have felt like really all I want to just be part of my church. I want to be seen. I want to be included. And so the times that my pastors have even engaged me in conversation about the Bible, shared their books with me, invited me to, like, one of my pastors invited me to a training on preaching that he was doing at our local seminary. Like, those gestures, I mean, I can't even tell you how much they mean to me. They're validating. I feel seen. I feel like, and I don't really want to be in on, let me just say this. I don't want my pastor's job. I do not want to preach. I don't. I'm totally happy with the way that God has gifted me to serve women. However, yeah, there's some overlap. It's like the right and the left hand working together. I mean, you're preaching, both teaching Romans 9. And so that's very appropriate. And then I think you shared too that, what was the extra special way that he blessed you?
Oh my goodness. Okay. So not only did he spend that time with me, us talking, and really, even in that conversation, he was so affirming of the things that I brought to the table too, and some of the ways that I explained my understanding or my own like metaphors with it. So that was great. But then when we went and we actually taught it, this other lady and I kind of taught together, he came And he just slipped into the back, very nonchalant, you know, not wanting to seem intimidating or like he was checking up on us, you know, being critical or anything like that. He slipped in and he took notes. And afterwards, he shared his notes with us. And it was just so affirming to hear very specific feedback of the things that both her and I had shared in our teaching on Romans 9.
It's precious. It's so sweet because there is an order, right? He is your shepherd. And so for him to shepherd you in that way and affirm you, I mean, I don't think men realize that our leadership men realize how much that means to us women who are in these teaching roles. It just, or leading roles like you. Yeah.
And it doesn't make me, you know, hearing that doesn't make me want his job. It makes me feel so appreciative and affirmed to continue in the work that I'm doing, not just as like, well, hello over there, good job, but you know, us working together and seeing that we're really working on, hopefully together, creating better marriages too, as we're working, you know, men's ministry, women's ministry, studying the same scripture together. And
yeah. And I think there's actually a danger when the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing, you know, and that is, I think, sometimes the temptation. Women are so different. We're so emotional. Your job, Cheyenne, is, I mean, it is plus sized. It is like, 'cause women bring a lot, you know, they're willing to share their emotions in a way that men don't. Like, your job is very taxing. But I think those differences are duly noted. And I think sometimes in churches, the leadership, they look over at women's ministry and they're like, I don't know what they're doing over there. It's, you know, there's a lot of tears. There's a lot of coffee, a lot of, you know, just a lot. It's a lot. And I think sometimes they just put this divider up. They're not even invested enough to know what's going on. And that can be dangerous too, right?
I think what I'm hearing you even say is like, one, We just crave that invitation into the conversation, right? But two, we crave for them to enter in. We don't have any expectations of them. They don't need to be crying with us, right? But we want to be seen and for them to not be afraid to enter the room still too.
Yeah, I kind of hear like we would love for them to enter our space. Like your pastor coming to listen was so meaningful to you. And I've experienced that too. I remember speaking at a camp. And there was a man who was there who came to all the sessions with his wife. And then I found out he was a pastor of a large church. And I'm like, I am so humbled that you would sit through my messages. And he just said, oh, I was just so blessed by them. And, you know, gave me some encouragement. I was like, oh my goodness, how much that meant to me. So like them coming into our space is meaningful, but inviting us into that space, not to lead, but to give our input, like how can you shepherd a church that is half women and not have any input from women? How can you do that? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I'm sure you can do it, but I think it, again, you need women in some of those spaces, some of those conversations. Because I don't know, we're moms, we're sisters. We even sometimes see things in the men in our lives that the men don't see themselves. I think God has gifted us with this ability to be very self-aware and very aware of other people too, in ways that other men don't see in each other even.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's called women's intuition, but you know, I experience that with my husband all the time. I'll say, oh, did you notice this or this? And, you know, in that room, there was this tension a little. And he's like oblivious. You know, I have this sixth sense where I'm able. And really what it is relational perception. And I'm not saying no men have that, but it is. We see Eve was created for Adam. She was fit for him. She was taken from him, from his rib, and created, almost crafted to fit him, you know, so that their bodies fit together. Like she was what he was not. And so there's just a relational way that she was designed. I mean, I think we've talked before about how women, like we receive our husbands, we nurture babies. Like there is this carrying angle in our arm. Like men, we have a bent
arm a little bit so that we can hold a baby. You know, men's arm is straight. They can throw a football. This is, I'm borrowing from Mary Cassian here, but men can throw a football. Women can hold a baby more comfortably. We are designed for a relationship. And so we are aware of things that men just, you know, they aren't. And so we want to serve in these ways. We want to be just an added support to our shepherds. We want, you know, we are not trying to take over. We just want to be included and give insight.
I think sometimes in the church, it can be like, you know, men see themselves in this role and the things that they don't want to do or are not good at, they then give to women, right?
Like what?
Well, like the cleanup, the setup, the decorating, the making food, those types.
Okay, we don't want them decorating though. or food. My husband led a meeting at work a couple years ago, and he was the one organizing everything. And when everyone got there, he realized he didn't have forks and he didn't have drinks. And he was like, well, oh, and no decor. So they had to pull, like, it was Christmas, they had to pull poinsettias. No. Poinsettias. Sorry. They had to pull poinsettias from the foyer. Anyway, so yeah, we don't want the men doing, like, women are gifted for these things.
Well, I suppose what I'm saying is just going back to what we were saying of the way that women have this intuition and this relational thing, without needing to take over or to make authoritative shepherding type decisions, women have a role in counsel, I think, in providing insight that can help men with making decisions. We don't need to know all of the information. We don't need to make some of those decisions that should be done by elders and by deacons and by the pastors. But I think that there is nothing wrong with a pastor seeking some counsel from some women within his church.
So yeah, what we're arguing for is balance. We're arguing for complementary roles. So where women are included and yet they are deferring. They're bringing their insights, their gifts, and yet they are deferring. When there's a disagreement, they don't have perhaps all of the information that the leaders do. They can't have all that information. And so they are deferring and yet included. So, I mean, what a beautiful balance.
It is beautiful. And I see, you know, part of the struggle, I think, sometimes with implementing true complementarianism is we see the risks. So for women, inviting men into our spaces means potentially facing them being critical of the ways that we're doing things or questioning, right? That can be a risk that we're like, eh, you know what? You stay in your corner. I'll stay in my corner. Here's your letters on the keyboard. Here's my letters on the keyboard. Let's not, let's stay separate. And then for men, I think that they can worry about us wanting to take over. And I think that both of those fears are risks, right? I think we both can lend to those fatal flaws.
Right. And also, I mean, you know, we've talked about how it's a plus that women have relational capacity, but that can be dangerous. We know that, you know, making emotional decisions for the church is not good. So we understand that, right?
Sure, we do. Yeah. But it's important still to follow this design that God has given us. And just like in marriage, we don't always follow it perfectly. And we do have to sometimes work through our sin and give grace and forgiveness to one another. Likewise in the church.
We're called a family. And there's always a risk in family. You know, there's always the risk of letting people in and knowing them intimately. But I really appreciate that you called out, like, this is a risky thing. Complementarianism is risky. And I think we're mostly talking about churches that embrace complementarianism. This role distinction thing, though, I think what you and I are arguing for is, yes, it's distinct. It's just not separate. And so putting those two pieces together, there's risk. And yet we're family. We're brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, daughters and sons. And we should treat each other as family. You and I, Cheyenne, have a couple of friends from a church that we've just seen complementarian demonstrated in a beautiful way, right?
Yeah. So one of the ways that Shannon, you and I got to know each other was through doing this women's teaching program through Stonegate Church in Midlothian, Texas. And as we got to kind of know the backstory to this whole, how this whole program evolved, we came to find out that it evolved out of the pastors of the church inviting some of these women, these female leaders, into their trainings on preaching and teaching, right?
Yeah. So they do these intensives where they take turns preaching to each other and receiving feedback. So they invited the women in, and the women were like, that's intimidating. You know, so the women were doing teaching. The women were teaching women, and they were invited to come and give feedback. But for them to take a turn, like, that was super intimidating. So then that out of that, I hope I'm not misquoting them, but out of that came this whole teaching program where the women were teaching the women how to teach and giving feedback, creating this like community where everybody took turns, and you and I got to be part of it. We were like a Zoom group, and it was so valuable. But one of my favorite things was the night that their two lead pastors came and taught us on illustrations and application.
It was so good. And I think everyone in that program was so, we loved being led by Lindsay and by Kelly. We were also so excited to have the men like take the time to share this with us. And, you know, as women, this is something else that we talked about. Our repetitions are how often we're able to teach. Like, we have to learn a lot in not as many opportunities.
Yeah, we're talking about our friends Kelly Needham and Lindsay Schott, who are both part of Stonegate Church. And yeah, I've heard them say repeatedly, like, we don't get enough reps. You know, a man who is preaching weekly gets all of these reps to refine his skills.
Also, we can benefit so much from the men who have had that time that they've been able to look and say, hey, 10 years ago, this is how I was doing it. And I've learned with all my repetitions, this is what I've learned. Because we have, most of us as women, if we're moms, we have a smaller window of the season of life that we can even do that on a weekly basis. I mean, not many of us can teach on a weekly basis.
Absolutely. Yeah, no way. And so, but what we saw is, as these women were being invited into the men teaching men, but then as they segmented over into their own space of training up women, their men were supporting them, encouraging them. And look at the fruit of that. When you have women teaching women and doing it well, I mean, that the fruit of that in your church, I can't imagine that any group of men would not want that for their church.
And it's an outpouring, right, of the leadership. It is an outpouring of the leadership to have the men teaching the women who are teaching more women.
We love you, Stonegate Church. Yeah, just had to include that illustration. And I love, in my conversation with Kelly Needham, we talked about how together we image God. In Genesis 1:27, it says, God created him in his own image, male and female, he created them. So there's something, it's a triad there. And there's something, the first two phrases say that God created man in his image, he created him. Then the third triad is male and female, he created them. So there's something about that distinction in roles that helps us image God. So a church full of men, or a church full of women, neither one images God in the way that a church full of brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, daughters and sons, that images God.
And then I think it goes into tying in this be fruitful and multiply, right? That together we can multiply the church better than when we're being, like you said, distinct and separate. Being distinct but together is really the pattern that we see for being fruitful as a church.
Amen, sister. I love it. Anything else you want to add?
I think that's it. It was a great conversation.
So enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Cheyenne.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me for this True Story of the Beginning series. I hope you'll take some time alone with God and with your Bible open to Genesis 1-3. Drink in the true story for yourself, this true story that you're in. Let it reframe your story with the truth. To help you work through this narrative, I've put some tools together for you in my free Live Like It's True workbook. The workbook is particularly designed to help you work through the narratives or the stories in the Bible.
It'll help you sort through how the true story of Genesis 1 through 3 refutes the false narratives in the world. You can find a link for your free workbook in the show notes, along with links to some of the various other resources we've been mentioning and recommending. Many of these resources are actually written by our guests in this season, including Nancy Guthrie, Mary Cassian, Courtney Doctor, and more. Are you enjoying this podcast? If so, would you be willing to rate and review? This helps us widen our reach and helps us to serve others as they're able to find the show. Also, if you have questions or ideas for me, I would love to hear from you. Thanks so much to my producer, Maria Lyons, and my son, Cade Popkin, for providing all of the music that you hear here on the show. And thanks most of all to you for tuning in. It is my joy and privilege to serve you. And now it's time to go live like it's true.